Our focus on the cross and in the eyes of Luke in this class will focus mainly on Luke 22:40 through 24:53. We are studying the Gospels right now in the perspective of each of the authors of the Gospels. And after this class, I'll hand it back over to Bill. He'll focus on John. But I want to start, we mentioned this earlier as we were talking about the theme. I want to start here in Luke 1, 1 through 4. I'll have James read this for me.
Inasmuch as many have undertaken to compile a narrative of the things that have been accomplished among us, just as those who from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word have delivered them to us. It seemed good to me also, having followed all things closely for some time past, to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, that you may have certainty concerning the things you have been taught.
Good. So he wants to give us certainty of the things that we've been taught. And in verse 1 of Luke, highlights that these things have been accomplished. Another word here, some of your versions might say fulfilled, that these things have been fulfilled. If you look now at the bookend, looking at Luke 24, let's read Luke 24, 44 through 45.
Then he said to them, "These are my words that I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms must be fulfilled." Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures.
Good. So this is after the resurrection. He's appeared to his disciples. And one of the main ideas Luke is writing about here is how Jesus has fulfilled everything that's written about him. And this really supports also what we've been focusing on in this class. The cross of Jesus in history, no moment did more to shape the world and change the direction of humanity than the crucifixion did. It is an event that is universal and uniquely personal. It is seemingly insignificant in its moment and yet life-altering for everyone who has ever lived. And it is the moment that all of history leads to and that all time since is measured against. And Grant mentioned this too. Luke is focusing and directing us towards the cross. Like that is the climax of time. But why? Because he rose on the third day. Because he conquered sin and death. Because we can see the severity of sin, of what Jesus went through, the severity of sin on the cross, and God's justice and his love for us. And because the God of life gave us life once more through the cross. So, again, at the end here, after he's been resurrected, this is a unique story that you only see in Luke. This story about how Jesus encountered two disciples on the road to Emmaus. And it's such a awesome story. And you know, if you think about a place you could be in history, to be on the road and encounter Jesus at this time would be all-time top time periods to be in history. To have Jesus interact with you at this time like he did with the two disciples. As they were leaving Jerusalem, they were talking about all the things that had happened. And Jesus drew near and walked with them. And these two disciples were sad. They were in disbelief about all the things that just happened. And verse 21 tells us why. It says, "But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel." We talked a little bit about this on Sunday in talking about Mark. But this hope that they had of what was going to happen, this redemption of Israel that they were looking for. And they were convinced that this would look differently. This redemption would look differently. They were hoping, and maybe we talked about this too, that maybe there's some personal gain they would have from what Christ was going to do and the redemption they were going to have. And also, do we have that same hope in life? Like whenever we are following Jesus, do we have certain hopes that might not align with what has truly been given to us through the redemption that we've received through Him? But, I mean, did He redeem Israel? Yes, He did, right? He redeemed Israel. But what is Israel? Israel's not just that one nation anymore, right? Israel is looking for all mankind. We have all been redeemed through the cross.
They had hoped that He would redeem Israel from Rome.
Yes.
Jesus redeemed them from this devil.
Yes. They were hoping for redemption from Rome. They wanted freedom. That's another key thing in Luke. They were looking for freedom, that He was going to free them. And they were felt like they were in captivity to Rome, and they were looking for that versus redemption from their sins and from the devil. So let's continue going back to Luke 1, 51 through 54. I'll have James read this for us. And as he's about to read this, you know, Luke records these praises and prophecies of what God's plan through the cross was going to be. In going along with that whole plan of redemption. Let's read this.
He has shown strength with His arm. He has shattered the proud in the thoughts of their hearts. He has brought down the mighty from their thrones and exalted those of humble estate. He has fulfilled the hungry with good things, and the rich He has sent away empty. He has helped His servant Israel in remembrance of His mercy.
So this is Mary's praise that she wrote, right? Or that Luke records that Mary had. So we have that in Luke 1, and also continuing in Luke 1, then we have here another prophecy, and let's read Luke 168.
Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, for He has visited and redeemed His people.
So this is what Zechariah wrote, this prophecy that he wrote in Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist. And let's continue Luke 2:29-32.
Lord, now You are letting Your servant depart in peace, according to Your word. For my eyes have seen Your salvation, that You have prepared in the presence of all peoples, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and for glory to Your people Israel.
Good. So in this passage, what did Jesus come to do? Good. Redeeming His people. That's right. Not only to Israel here, but to the Gentiles as well. And so and for glory to Your people, right? So he's saying all these things are going to happen. We talked about that these things were going to happen. But at the end, still, they were like, well, we thought He was going to do this through the cross. And then looking at Luke 4:18, as Jesus was beginning His ministry, He's in His hometown and He was given a scroll in the synagogue. He was given a scroll, the prophet Isaiah, and he found this passage and he read this.
The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because He has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor.
Good. So what does this say He came to do as well, adding to the other things we talked about? Freedom. Good. Yeah. Good. So he was looking here, he's proclaiming the good news to the poor, right? Proclaim liberty to the captives. Proclaim the year of the Lord's favor in this passage. These are the things that will, this is what Jesus was pointing towards as he was looking to the cross of what would be accomplished. And so going back to that road to Emmaus, this was Jesus' response to those two disciples. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory? So one thing that Luke does really well, too, is he does really well at in all of these passages that we read. He does really well at comparing and contrasting, right? He compares how some people react to his teaching and how others react. And he contrasts how everyone might react to what his teachings are. So as we review the cross in the eyes of Luke, I really want to focus on those comparisons and contrasting. How those around him reacted. How did they respond to the cross? How did they respond to Jesus' teaching? What did Jesus go through that was unique in Luke that other books didn't write about in their Gospels? And so as we're looking at this, the question that we have to ask ourselves is, do we understand why Christ had to suffer and what that means in our life? Do we accept him and what he did on the cross? Do we accept him, what he did? And do we accept that life that he calls us to follow him and to deny ourselves and take up our cross and bear it? So we're going to look at these next passages. Won't read through all of them. Some of them will summarize. But what I'd like to do is read the passages, and I've kind of labeled them here to read one on the left and the other one on the right. And then we'll take a minute just to think about it, talk to someone around you, and then we'll share what we feel like are comparisons or contrasts from the passages here. Before we move in that, any other comments about the things we've looked at so far? All right, let's look at Luke 22. And I don't have all these passages up. There's going to be a lot to be on the PowerPoint. So I'm going to make you look at your electronic or paper Bibles here. So Luke 22, 39 through 46. So here we're Garden of Gethsemane, where Luke says here that he's coming to the Mount of Olives. James, will you read this passage for us?
And he came out and went, as was his custom, to the Mount of Olives, and the disciples followed him. And when he came to the place, he said to them, "Pray that you may not enter into temptation." And he withdrew from them about a stone's throw and knelt down and prayed, saying, "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done." And there appeared to him an angel from heaven, strengthening him. And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down to the ground. And when he rose from prayer, he came to the disciples and found them sleeping for sorrow. And he said to them, "Why are you sleeping? Rise and pray that you may not enter into temptation."
Okay, so from this passage, I think you can see there's a couple things that Luke describes that the other Gospels didn't describe. We'll look at that in a minute. But let's also look at Luke 4. So going back to the temptation and how it was recorded here, the temptation that Jesus went through with Satan. And so in Luke 4, verses 1 through 11, it describes how I'll start the verses here. And Jesus, full of the Holy Spirit, returned from the Jordan and was led by the Spirit in the wilderness for 40 days, being tempted by the devil, and he ate nothing during those days. And when they were ended, he was hungry. And then it goes through this dialogue between Jesus and Satan. In afterwards, and I'm going to pull from Matthew for this part, go in Matthew 4, verse 11. One of the things that Matthew identifies is, there it says, then the devil left him, and behold, angels came and were ministering to him. So just thinking about Jesus preparing for the cross here in the garden and his praying, and then also thinking about the temptations he underwent with Satan in that interaction that he went through. What comparisons can you pull out from that? What do you see from those two events in Jesus' life? Think about it for a minute. You can talk to someone next to you, and then we'll talk through that. All right, does anybody have anything to share from these two passages? Yeah, how Jesus, he made all these things, and the devil's trying to tempt him with those things. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, so we see that in Luke's account, how he sent an angel there in the garden with him while he was praying to strengthen him. Yeah. He was alone. In both cases, he was alone. No one was with him. Yeah. Yeah, so definitely, I mean, temptation is identified in both of these passages. And the temptation that he went through, both of them are of a spiritual nature in a way, but it seems like in Luke 4, it's more of those physical things that he's tempted of this world, right? Versus, what is he's going to have to go through this spiritual strength that he needs to go through the cross, take on all of our sins.
But even in the garden, I think it was the physical that said, deliver me from this.
That's right.
The spiritual said, your will be done.
That's good. So the physical, deliver me from this, but the spiritual, your will be done. Fasting and praying, yeah. Good. So prayer. All right, let's continue. Let's look at Luke 23:39. And then we'll continue through that through 43. So looking at 39 verses, comparing two verses 40 through 43. James, will you read that for us? 23:39 through 43.
One of the criminals who were hanged railed at him, saying, "Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us." But the other rebuked him, saying, "Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed, justly, for we are receiving the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong." And he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And he said to him, "Truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise."
All right, so this is, again, unique to Luke, looking at this passage and this interaction as well. So compare these two criminals and how they're reacting to seeing what Christ is going through, to seeing the cross and looking at that. Compare those two things. So think about that for a minute, talk, and then we'll share that. Yeah, so in the other Gospels, it identifies both criminals as speaking, like mocking Jesus there on the cross, right? But we get a different side of what's happening here with one of those criminals and how they responded. Good, we'll keep talking through that. What else? Yeah, right there at the end of your life, focusing still on that, I need relief from what I'm feeling right now physically versus that spiritual perspective of what they could have and what they could look to.
Jason. That also, yeah, it defines their understanding of who Jesus is, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And the thief who believes is able to see past the surface level of the suffering and the mocking to the deeper truth, which is there's something different about it.
That's right. So seeing there's something different about what Jesus can do, and he has the power to save through the cross. Yeah. So Jesus' compassion, his love, is demonstrated even when a time man could it be any darker, right, of how they're treating Jesus during that time. And yet he still has the compassion to save. And considering that this thief on the cross was probably already mocking him and treating him bad like the other criminal, and then he turns around and changes right there, and he has the compassion to save him.
Humble way.
Yes. So one, looking, save me right now, versus looking to, there's something greater that I can be looking to. Yeah, that's a good perspective, right? So comparing that to the temptation Satan was doing, and he's doing it right next to him on the cross. Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's good. Shows the humility that we need to admit where we are, and that we need Christ. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. You could picture this. We read it, but we could picture it almost like gasping as they're talking, right? To be able to say these things to each other and have this type of dialogue in agony. All right, let's continue because we got a lot more verses here to go through. So Luke 15, 11 through 32. Unique parable here, right in the middle of Luke, talking about the parable of the prodigal son. So we won't read through all of that, but looking at this whole idea, the parable of the prodigal son, how the prodigal son, he doesn't want to stay, he doesn't want to wait for his inheritance, he wants it now, his father gives it to him, and then you have this other brother that stays with his father, and then he gives it all away, he lives a life that is just spending all of his money and living the life he wants to live, very worldly life. Then he's in the pits, you know, he's with pigs, and he's like, my servants of my father are treated better than that. I want to go back to my father, and maybe he would accept me as a servant. And his father is just running to him, accepting him, right? And the other brother, jealous of him. So looking at that versus, and let's compare Luke 23, 33 through 36. James, can you read that?
And when they came to the place that is called the Skull, there they crucified him, and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. And Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they cast lots to divide his garments. And the people stood by watching, but the rulers scoffed at him, saying, He saved others. Let him save himself. If he is the Christ of God, his chosen one. The soldiers also mocked him, coming up and offering him sour wine. In verse 46. Then Jesus, calling out with a loud voice, said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And having said this, he breathed his last.
So looking at these two stories here, you have the lost son, the prodigal son, and looking at what Jesus went through for us. What if you think about these two passages, what are your thoughts on what Jesus went through for all of us? And if you think about the sons representing two groups, right? Those that were lost and can now come back to Jesus. And then those that were already following Jesus, they were already trying, they thought they were righteous, and what Jesus did for both of them. What are your thoughts about these passages and looking at this example?
I think, you know, lots in Luke 15 with the two sons, he's talking about the Jews and both the Pharisees and both, you know, the sinners. But I think in the story, I mean, you see the response of the older brother, which would be the normal response, the typical response. Like, now you want to come back, now you think you deserve this, now you want to... I mean, like, and if, because of the sacrifice of Jesus, we are brothers of Jesus. I think you see the response of the two older brothers in saying, Father, forgive me. Like, that's what the older brother in Luke 15 should have said.
Yeah.
You know, he should have been rejoicing that his brother came home. And in Luke 23, like we just read, we see the real older brother's response, that he's doing this because he wants us lost sons to come back to the Father.
That's right. Good. Yes. Yeah.
The verse on the right, in verse 46, he basically yields to the Father. And in a way, he's returning to
the Father. Yeah, he's returning to the Father. Good.
The thief that was reviling Jesus, he was pardoned. And that's what this young man was about. He was proud. I've never seen him like that. And this thief was like, if he had been willing to humble himself and acknowledge
That's good. Yeah. So we have that choice of staying outside or coming to the Father's house. And that house is open to each of us. Yes. Good. There's this grand reward by coming home. So that leads into this next group of passages. Let's look at Luke 1, 8 through 23 here. So again, this is going back to Zechariah. And again, thinking about at the beginning of Luke here, it was Zechariah's time to enter the temple of the Lord and to burn incense. And in this passage here, an angel appeared to him, an angel of the Lord standing here. And then this angel of the Lord is telling him not to be afraid. And he's afraid here as he encounters the angel. And then he's talking about how he's going to have, how Elizabeth is going to bear a son in this story. And does Zechariah believe this is going to happen? No, he doesn't believe. He doesn't believe how this can happen. And he questions this. Zechariah said to the angel, "How shall I know this? For I'm an old man and my wife is advanced in years." And the angel answered him, and this is verse 19. Verse 19, "And the angel answered him, I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God, and I was sent to speak to you and to bring you this good news. And behold, you will be silent and unable to speak until the day that these things take place, because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their time." So you have this scene that happens in the temple here with Zechariah and this unbelief that happens. And so let's now look at Luke 24. Luke 24, 50 through 53. James, will you read that? And again, this is when Jesus has now appeared to his disciples again. At the end of Luke here and before he ascends. So verse 50.
"Then he led them out as far as Bethany, and lifting up his hands, he blessed them. While he blessed them, he parted from them and was carried up into heaven. And they worshipped him and returned to Jerusalem with great joy and were continually in the temple blessing God."
Good. So that now you have this contrast of being in the temple and what happens in this temple and what the cross does for us. So what are your thoughts about comparing these two passages?
have the beginning of this book starts with worship in the temple and ends with worship in the temple.
Yeah. So again, the book ends, right? Looking at the beginning, starting in the temple, and then at the end, worshiping in the temple. What does the temple typically represent? God, the house of God, right? And so we were talking about coming home, right, earlier with the prodigal son. And through the cross, now we see this picture of Jesus heading to Jerusalem, heading to the cross. And at the end here, where it starts in the temple with this unbelief, and at the end, they're praising God and they believe in Jesus and what he's accomplished. And now they can be at home in peace in the temple. And let's finish with these last passages. So the passages in on the left there, Luke 22. Do 60 through 62, James.
But Peter said, "Man, I do not know what you are talking about." And immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the saying of the Lord, how he had said to him, "Before the rooster crows today, you will deny me three times." And he went out and wept bitterly.
So again, something a little bit unique about the book of Luke here, and how verse 61, and the Lord turned and looked at Peter after he had denied him. And then 24, 8 through 11, let's look at that passage. James, you want to read that?
And they remembered his words, and returning from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to all the rest. Now, it was Mary Magdalene and Joanna and Mary, the mother of James, and the other women with them who told these things to the apostles. These words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them.
In verse 12.
But Peter rose and ran to the tomb, stooping and looking in. He saw the linen cloths by themselves, and he went home marveling at what had happened.
Good, again, notice the looking, right? They're looking to Jesus. And some of the reaction is idle tale, they did not believe. And then you have more looking at Jesus and saw the linen cloths of what had happened, that he wasn't there, marveling at what happened. These responses of looking at Jesus. 24, 13 through 24. So again, now we're looking at the road, these two disciples. So going into this story more about these two disciples and how their eyes were kept. It says there in verse 16, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him when Jesus approached them. And they were talking about, as we said earlier, they were having conversation. And Jesus comes to them and says, you know, what are you talking about? And he's like, are you the only one that doesn't know what happened there in Jerusalem? And then, as it continues in that story, and Jesus says, was it not, O foolish ones, was this not necessary that the Christ should suffer? It says in verse 26, you continue down, and let's look at verses 30 now, starting in verse 30. So they asked him to stay with them, and when he was at table with them, so when Jesus was at table with the two disciples, he took the bread and blessed and broke it and gave it to them, and their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. And they said to each other, did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road? And then he goes in verse 36, he appears to the disciples. Did they immediately believe who he was when he came and approached them? No, they were in disbelief as well. And he said, look at the scars, right? He had to eat something, so he showed that he was in the flesh. So the question here is, When we look to Jesus, what are we seeing? How are we reacting? We see different reactions here. We can look at these and compare. So are we marveling? Are we amazed at the cross and what he's done? Are we not believing in it? Like, where are we at when we're looking to Jesus? And so the cross in the eyes of Luke opens our eyes to see that everything written about Jesus was fulfilled. Redemption was accomplished. It was necessary. The cross was necessary for Christ to enter his glory. It was the cost to bring us home with God, and the Lord has risen indeed. Thank you for all the comments.